We're talking with former Secretary of Agriculture Dan Glickman. And Mr. Secretary, let's talk a little bit about the subject that you were kind of tasked with today at the Alltech International Conference, the idea of food waste and what's the problem and what's the solution.
Well, we waste about 30 to 40% of our food. It either spoils or it's rots or it's thrown out. And of course, in the U.S. and the developed world, that's usually because of people, food goes beyond the sell-by dates, or people don't think it looks good, or they buy more than they consume. Whereas in the developing world, it's lack of refrigeration, lack of electricity, lack of roads, a whole assortment of things. But if we were able to reduce that food waste from, let's say, 30 to 40% to even 20 to 30%, it would have a profound impact on hunger at home and overseas. And also it would reduce the environmental footprint, because just think, we're using all that carbon and all that gasoline to produce food that's not even eaten.
Seems like in the U.S. especially, and in Europe as well, the urgency maybe is not there as much as in the third world.
Yeah, the urgency isn't here because, by and large, nobody's in a famine situation in America, or shouldn't be. Even if you are hungry or don't have resources, there are still programs, the food stamp program, the WIC program, and then Feeding America and all the food banks in this country. It's not a great solution, but at least it keeps people from the kind of famine that you have in sub-Saharan Africa and India and other places where they just don't have access to that. And if you're, let's say the cases of vegetables and fruits are the highest wasted item, and they ought to be the easiest to save, you know, with good storage facilities, with some electrification and other kinds of modern technology. So I don't think this is an impossible problem to get to work at.
In the third world, clearly they've got some real infrastructure problems that add up to these problems that you've mentioned.
They do, and they've also got governance problems. A lot of times their societies are corrupt. The roads don't work. You know, and in some places it's getting better too. And about half the countries in the world that are achieving success now are in Africa. 5 of the 10 fastest growing countries in the world are in sub-Saharan Africa. In the U.S., you know, we do provide surplus food to food banks. We still have a lot of people who throw away food because of the sell-by date on the packaging, which in most cases it's a cosmetic issue, not a food safety issue. It just needs to be a higher priority issue in all parts of the world. Farmers in some quarters have done a really good job of gleaning their fields. Obviously, you can't do that in wheat or corn very easily, but you can do that in the fresh vegetable and fresh fruit area.
You alluded to some Good Samaritan laws that we need to let more people know about.
So the federal government and many states have passed these laws, which says that you're not going to get sued if you, let's say, provide food to food banks or to the hungry, providing that you take reasonable steps on food safety. So obviously you're not going to leave potato salad out for a week and then send it to a food bank. But these laws give some immunization against legal liability. A lot of people don't know about them, and a lot of people still think that they'll be liable if they provide surplus foods. And so people should really check on that wherever they live to see if their states provide that kind of protection.
We've obviously got tremendous agricultural research facilities and capabilities in our country. What can we do, for example, the ARS, for example, from USDA, in helping some of these countries that do have problems, you know, in the third world?
Well, I'm now the chairman of this. Vilsack appointed me chairman of this new foundation for food and agriculture research. And one of our priorities is going to be looking at ways to reduce food waste. And there's a lot of ways to do it, finding inexpensive technologies for refrigeration and storage. But more generally, plants and animals that are resistant to disease and pests. So a lot of farm commodities are actually lost because of that, pest and disease, or part of a crop is lost and part isn't, and then they destroy the whole crop because it's not productive to produce it. So these are issues that actually the whole world ought to be interested in. It's not just the poor nations of the developing world. I think we have an interest as well in the U.S. And a lot of our land-grant schools and non-land-grant schools are doing some research in this area.
I guess this is one of the ways that we do address the 9.5 billion people by 2050.
Yeah, you know, it's low-hanging fruit, at least it ought to be. Now, we know that we're going to have to increase yields where appropriate, improve soil quality, improve basic technologies, improve the way people are educated and schooled and how they plant their crops, how they apply fertilizer, chemicals, and all the basics of agriculture. But we also have to look at all kinds of solutions as well. And, you know, I happen to be one that believes that, some of the new technologies, genetic engineering, biotechnology, that's an important part of the mix. But so are the low-tech items. Just by using fertilizer more effectively, you can increase yields dramatically.
One of the areas you during the Q&A period, you brought the idea of the influences that are out there right now on consumers and how they perceive agriculture. And you made a statement that was really interesting about Walmart having the pulse of the consumer.
Yeah, Walmart sells over 20% of the food in the United States and growing percentages around the world. And they, given their market share, they have a great ability to influence what people buy. But in addition to that, they are influenced by what people are saying. And, you know, and so in doing that, they seem to be showing more of an interest in buying locally, because there's a lot of political pressure to buy locally, because a lot of people think Walmart comes in and just kind of zaps the community, so to speak. But Walmart can be a great influence, and that's the changing face of agriculture in this country. So who would have thought that a big retailer would be a major force in agriculture? And they can kind of decide what people buy or not. That's pretty impactful. And the other side, of course, is the consumers. So it used to be, I cite this movie all the time, Field of Dreams, where they say, if we build it, they will come. But now it's if we build it, but if they buy it, if they like it, if they think it's safe, if it's tasty, if they know where it comes from, and all these kinds of things, then they'll buy it. So consumers are much more empowered. And that's not bad news for production agriculture. Production agriculture is a business, and they only survive by meeting the needs of their consumers.
One of the commission that Mr. Vilsack has appointed you of as chair, what are the priorities of that particular commission?
Well, we haven't totally picked a new executive director of the commission. That's likely to happen in early June, and that director will be involved in the priorities. But, you know, it's clearly we're going to look at issues like photosynthesis, how we get more energy out of plants, animal disease, nutrition, you know, a big part of it, water, soil, kind of the issues that we generally work on. But a lot of stuff is high risk, and therefore the traditional forces of research at the land-grant schools and even others don't tackle, because it's not likely to produce success. And we are in charge to do those projects that don't duplicate what's already being done and might be a little higher risk in order to move the needle.